Blog Talk Radio.
I had a dream the other night that, well, I didn't understand. A figure walked in through the mist with a flintlock in his hand. His clothes were torn and dirty as he stood there by my bed. He took off his three-cornered hat, and speaking low to me, he said, "We fought a revolution to secure our liberty. We wrote the Constitution as a shield from tyranny. For future generations, this legacy we gave. In this, the land of the free and home of the brave. The freedoms we secured for you, we hoped you'd always keep. But tyrants labored endlessly while your parents were asleep. Your freedom's gone, your courage lost, you're no more than a slave. In this, the land of the free and home of the brave. You buy permits to travel and permits to own a gun, permits to start a business or to build a place for one. On land that you believe you own, you pay a yearly rent, although you have no voice in saying how the money's spent. Your children must attend a school that doesn't educate, and your Christian values can't be taught according to the state. You read about the current news in a regulated press, and you pay a tax you do not owe to please the IRS. Your money is no longer made of silver nor of gold. You trade your wealth for paper so your life can be controlled. You pay for crimes that make our nation turn from God in shame. You've taken Satan's number. You've traded in your name. You've given government control to those who do you harm so they could burn down churches and seize the family farm and keep our country deep in debt, put men of God in jail, harass your fellow countrymen while corrupted courts prevail. Your public servants don't uphold the solemn oaths they've sworn. And your daughters visit doctors so their children won't be born. Your leaders send artillery and guns to foreign shores and send your sons to slaughter fighting other people's wars. Can you regain the freedoms for which we fought and died? Or don't you have the courage or the faith to stand with pride? And are there no more values for which you'll fight to save? Or do you wish your children to live in fear and be a slave? Oh, sons of the Republic, arise, take a stand. Defend the Constitution, the supreme law of the land. Preserve our great republic and each God-given right. And pray to God to keep the torch of freedom burning bright. As I awoke, he'd vanished in the mist from whence he came. His words were true. We are not free, but we have ourselves to blame. For even now, as tyrants trample each God-given right, we only watch and tremble, too afraid to stand and fight. If he stood by your bedside in a dream while you were asleep and wondered what remains of the freedoms he'd fought to keep, what would be your answer if he called out from the grave, "Is this still the land of the free and home of the brave?" God bless you, and God bless this republic.
Too many people in America fear their government, and the government is being run by too many powerful agencies like the IRS and others. I think it's time the people take the country back through their representative government.
Hey, Mr. Politician, living on that hill, living in that lap of luxury, on We the People's Bill. Don't have a clue how the other half is, and that is a shame. It's time to stop a tyranny. Forever loose. masses try to be his cattle and sheep. Only the people's land. Try to live as a free man. Your body's illegal. Let him home. Time to stop these thugs from stealing what's been got and a damn. Going for a revolution. Going for it now. It's time to save our constitution while we still got the guns in our hands. The clock of a tyranny. For if we don't, then who will do it for ourselves? And how about our children? What kind of future will we leave them? And if we won't, we'll wake up slaves on the global plantation. Calling for a revolution. Save our constitution while we still got the guns in our hands. Calling for a revolution. Going for it now. It's time to save our constitution while we still got the guns in our hands. While we still got the guns. Still got the guns in our hands.
Good morning and welcome to the Jim Dunzing Show, featuring opinions so good they ought to be yours. It is October 4th, 2012, here as we begin the broadcast day on Freedomizer Radio, www.freedomizerradio.com. Go there, scroll down about halfway down the page, you will find a chat room, join the discussion there about topics related to the show and topics completely unrelated to the show. You will also find links to listen to select archives, and links to listen to the live broadcast. Now, I told you yesterday that we would have coverage of what is now yesterday's presidential debate. And I did my best not to watch the coverage, the talking heads after the debate, because frankly, after an hour and a half of paying attention to the Obama-Romney debate, I had had about as much TV as I could take and far more bullshit double talk than I could stand. And so watching the propaganda networks was just not on my horizon. But there was a link to obviously the folks on Fox News. And I haven't watched anybody on Fox News, but you don't need to watch them on Fox News to know what their opinion was going to be. They thought Romney won the debate. Romney could have walked out in a pink tutu singing, "I'm an Oscar Mayer Wiener," and they'd have said he won the debate. It's Fox News. But then I saw a link on the Drudge Report, and I don't have this clip for you, and it would be worth having, but the technology wouldn't allow it. It's a clip of Chris Matthews going berserk. Now, Chris Matthews is the former chief of staff for Tip O'Neill, who was the Speaker of the House for 40 years, Democratic Speaker of the House for 40 years. Now, he's merely a commentator. And in that role, his job is to spin events. Now, he did a very, very good job of it last evening, because his spin was that Obama lost the debate. Now, I happen to disagree with him on this. Obama won this debate, and he won it walking away. I'll explain it to you why here in a second. But the spin out of it was that basically Obama lost the debate because he should have trounced Romney more because of how much a better candidate he is and how many mistakes Romney made that Obama didn't call him on. Now, frankly, if you're watching MSNBC or you're watching Fox News, your votes are pretty much well decided. If you're watching MSNBC, you're going to be voting for Barack Hussein Obama de Mombasa. If you're watching Sean Hannity on Fox, you're going to be voting for Mittens. It's those people in the middle who aren't watching either of those propaganda networks, who may have watched the first 30 minutes of the debate, if you're lucky, all 90 minutes of the debate. Those are your swing voters. Rasmussen has out a poll that about 42% are locked into the Republican candidate and about 42% are locked in to the Democratic candidate. That leaves 12 or 14% that are undecided. That's who the debate was trying to get to. That's the battleground of this debate. The people who are going to vote for you anyway, doesn't matter if they liked your performance, unless you do so bad you lose their vote. But those 42% on both sides, they're not going to lose them. They're locked in. So the battle was over the other 12, 14%. And those people don't watch debates like you and I watch debates. They don't have a philosophical, a kind of well-forged philosophical basis for their beliefs. They're not going there looking for a candidate to say certain things. They're just going there to, in their own words, would be something like to see which candidate is best and pick the best candidate regardless of party. And what they mean, whether they know it or not, is they want to get a good look at the two candidates and see which ones they feel more comfortable with and just get a sense of which one is more presidential. Now, before we get into the actual words of the debate, the actual arguments they made, let's address the debate at this basic level. Because on this level, Barack Hussein Obama de Mombasa was head and shoulders above flip-flop Romney. Romney has this kind of smirk. He reminds me of the guys in Animal House. Not the guys in Belushi's frat house. The guys with the sleeveless sweaters and the dress shirts and the yachts. The guys who, that's who he reminds me of, kind of a more arrogant, less deserving George W. Bush. He's got that kind of arrogant smirk about him. He's got that phony smile. And you can tell he's a man of very little substance. Now, Barack Hussein Obama de Mombasa has a much calmer countenance about him, a much more presidential countenance about him. And it showed up, and these voters, these swing voters, aren't going to have analyzed it this way, but they're going to have gotten a sense of these things. It showed up when they were arguing over time, arguing over whose time it was to speak. Now, they had different strategies on doing it, and Obama's was far more successful. Romney basically complained to Lehrer that his time was being taken away on a couple of occasions. This is my time. Well, he got to speak, blah, blah, blah. Obama just started speaking and expected that he would be allowed to finish. Two very different strategies. Obama comes off looking like a president. Romney comes off looking like somebody asking for a favor from the moderator. That level of that kind of activity from both candidates is going to set the stage for the people watching the debate. Those 12 or 14% are going to look, and they're going to see a nervous, whiny, smirky Romney who's got a lot of nervous tics and a lot more movements about him. Then they're going to look at Obama, and they're going to see a guy who looks calm, cool, and collected. And now on specifics, both of them have the wrong policies. Neither one of them know what's best for the economy or for the nation. They're both going to take the country in the wrong direction should they get elected. But on the pure arguments of it, Obama crafted an argument for this 14%. Now remember, they're not looking for the same thing you're looking for. When Obama comes out and talks about these programs, if you're watching this, listening to this show, you're already going to be opposed to him. The same time when Romney comes out and talks about his government programs, he wants to spend more on Medicare, you're going to be opposed to Romney for philosophical basis. These folks watching in this 14% don't have that philosophical underpinning. They're looking for a candidate that's going to generally do the right thing, the best thing. They don't think government should be what it could be. They don't look back to the founding of the nation, to the Magna Carta, for God's sakes. They don't look back with any kind of historical perspective on what our nation should be or should be doing. They see that government should be doing what it has always done in their lifetime, not what it has always done for the last hundreds or thousands of years. They don't know any of that. Government should be doing a better job of what it has done in their lifetime. That's how this 14% looks at this debate. So philosophical arguments about what programs should or not should not exist aren't going to appeal to these folks. Now here we're going to play the opening statements from Romney and Obama from last night's debate and then comment on the arguments they make in those opening statements and their effect on this 14% here on the Jim Dunzing Show, featuring opinions so good they ought to be yours as we begin the broadcast day here on Freedomizer Radio.
Gentlemen, welcome to you both. Let's start the economy, segment one, and let's begin with jobs. What are the major differences between the two of you about how you would go about creating new jobs? We have 2 minutes. Each of you have 2 minutes to start. A coin toss is determined. Mr. President, you go first.
Well, thank you very much, Jim, for this opportunity. I want to thank Governor Romney and the University of Denver for your hospitality.
Well, we're having some technical difficulties here. We'll try this in a second. We'll refresh this screen and try to get these opening statements here to play in the Blog Talk studio we have here. I don't want to have to play the closing statements first. But I want you to listen, when we get back to this, to the calmness in Obama's voice and the very different tone to Romney's statement. Here we go, second time, hopefully, is a charm.
Gentlemen, welcome to you both. Let's start the economy, segment one, and let's begin with jobs. What are the major differences between the two of you about how you would go about creating new jobs? We have 2 minutes, each of you have 2 minutes to start. A coin toss is determined. Mr. President, you go first.
Well, thank you very much, Jim, for this opportunity. I want to thank Governor Romney and the University of Denver for your hospitality.
And again, something seems to be wrong here with the audio. Let's go to the closing statements and see if that actually works for us here. Here's the closing statements on the presidential debate.
Gentlemen, welcome to you both. Let's start the economy, segment one, and let's begin with jobs. What are the major differences between the two of you about how you would go about creating new jobs? You have 2 minutes. Each of you have 2 minutes to start. A coin toss is determined. Mr. President, you go first.
Well, thank you very much, Jim, for this opportunity. I want to thank Governor Romney and the University of Denver for your hospitality.
And it appears the closing statements are also the shortened version of the opening statements. Here as we begin the broadcast day on Freedomizer Radio, www.freedomizerradio.com. Since we don't have those statements, we have one more to try, but I think it's going to give us the same problem as these other two did. I want to make a comment on Jim Lehrer. Normally, I'm not a fan of Jim Lehrer, but I think he did a very, very good job of moderating this presidential debate. Having moderated debates myself in the past, it's very easy for the moderator to kind of get in the way of the debate. The moderator should really be there to facilitate the two debaters and try to get them, like I think Lehrer did a very good job of, try to get them to talk about the differences between them. He's there to kind of keep the peace and try to keep the meeting as cordial as possible and as fair as possible. But his job is to get them to talk about their differences. And I think Lehrer did a good job of letting them run over on time, there was an entire segment of the debate they didn't really get to because the candidates had a good back and forth about the issue they were discussing, and it ran long. And Lehrer, I think, made the right decision to allow the candidates to do just that, to continue the back and forth rather than impose his 15-minute timeline that he had set or the commission had set prior to the debate. So I want to commend Jim Lehrer. Even a broken clock like Glenn Beck is right twice a day. Let's try this third clip I have here in the archive. They all say 4 minutes, 43 seconds, and it seems like we have about 20 seconds of audio on them. Let's try this one here.
Gentlemen, welcome to you both. Let's start the economy, segment one, and let's begin with jobs. What are the major differences between the two of you about how you would go about creating new jobs? You have 2 minutes. Each of you have 2 minutes to start. A coin toss is determined. Mr. President, you go first.
Well, thank you very much, Jim, for this opportunity. I want to thank Governor Romney and the University of Denver for your hospitality.
Well, the clip is still playing, but there is no sound coming out of it. Seems appropriate for Barack Hussein Obama to keep talking and have there be no sound. I'm going to take a break here and see if I can't fix this problem and then come back on the other side, hopefully with some of these clips or at least a transcript of this debate that we can go off of here for the next half hour. So stay tuned here for yet more opinions so good they ought to be yours after this.
man. You hear this bullshit they be talking every day, man. It's like these motherfuckers is just like professional liars, you know what I'm saying? It's wild. Listen, Bin Laden didn't blow up the projects. It was you, nigga. Tell the truth, nigga.
Bush knocked down the tower.
Tell the truth, nigga.
Bush knocked down the tower.
Tell the truth, nigga. Bin Laden didn't blow up the projects. It was you, nigga. Tell the truth, nigga.
Bush knocked down the tower.
Tell the truth, nigga.
Bush knocked down the tower.
I pledge no allegiance, nigga. Fuck the president's speeches. I'm baptized by America and covered in leeches. The dirty water that bleaches your soul and your facial features. Drowning you in propaganda that they spit to the speakers. And if you speak about the evil that the government does, the Patriot Act to track you to the type of your blood. They try to frame you and say you was trying to sell drugs and throw a federal indictment on niggas to show you love. This shit is run by fake Christians, fake politicians. Look at their mansions and look at the conditions you live in. All they talk about is terrorism on television. They tell you to listen, but they don't really tell you their mission. They funded Al-Qaeda, and now they blame the Muslim religion. Even though Bin Laden was a CIA tactician, they gave him billions of dollars, and they funded his purpose. Fahrenheit 9/11, that's just scratching the surface.
Bin Laden didn't blow up the projects. It was you, nigga. Tell the truth, nigga.
Bush knocked down the tower.
Tell the truth, nigga.
Bush knocked down the tower.
Tell the truth, nigga. Bin Laden didn't blow up the projects. It was you, nigga. Tell the truth, nigga.
Bush knocked down the tower.
Tell the truth, nigga.
Bush knocked down the tower.
They say the rebels in Iraq still fight with Saddam, but that's bullshit. I'll show you why it's totally wrong. Cause if another country invaded the hood tonight, it'll be warfare through Harlem and Washington Heights. I wouldn't be fighting for Bush or white America's dream. I'd be fighting for my people's survival and self-esteem. I wouldn't fight for racist churches from the south, my nigga. I'd be fighting to keep the occupation out, my nigga. You ever clock someone who broke shit for looking you wrong? Imagine if they shot at you and was raping your mom. And of course Saddam Hussein had chemical weapons. We sold them that shit after Ronald Reagan's election. Mercenary contractors fighting a new era. Corporate military banking off the war on terror. They controlling the ghetto with the fear of attack. Trying to distract the fact that they engineering the crack. So I'm strapped like Lee Malvo holding a sniper rifle. These bullets will touch your kids. And I don't mean like Michael. Your body be sent to the morgue, stripped down and recycled. I fire on house niggas that support you and like you. Because innocent people get murdered in the struggle daily. And poor people never get shit and struggle daily. This ain't no alien conspiracy theory. This shit is real. Written on a dollar underneath the Masonic seal.
Now I don't rap for dead presidents. I'd rather see the president dead. It's never been said, but I set precedents.
Bin Laden didn't blow up the projects. It was you, nigga. Tell the truth, nigga.
Bush knocked down the tower.
Tell the truth, nigga.
Bush knocked down the tower.
Tell the truth, nigga. Bin Laden didn't blow up the projects. It was you, nigga. Tell the truth,
city
nigga.
Freedom that we're fighting for, is it still our creed from shore to shore? After a soldier fights, should we read him his new rights? There's not that many to read anymore. Where's all the freedom that we're fighting for? Where's all the freedom that we fought to save? Is it gone for good with yesterday? Hey, it ain't no fun around. It's the same in every town. Can't show the Ten Commandments anymore. Where's all the freedom that we're fighting for?
My grandson done gone to battle, and I'm somewhere below Seattle. Can't afford to take my car to the grocery store.
Where's all the freedom that we're fighting for?
sun done gone to battle, and I'm somewhere below Seattle. Counting the cars with pulleys across the door. Where's all the freedom that we're fighting for? Where's all the freedom that we're praying for? Are we a nation under God anymore? How long do we carry down? Is this really still our ground? Our country's like a prisoner of war. Where's all the freedom that we're fighting for?
And welcome back to the Jim Dunzing Show, featuring opinions so good they ought to be yours. It is still October 4th, 2012, here as we begin the broadcast day on Freedomizer Radio, www.freedomizerradio.com. We have another attempt here to try to play these opening statements for you. We'll see how well this fourth attempt works for us here in just a second. It's still finalizing its upload here on the Blog Talk Studio. There it is. Fourth time's a charm here. Hopefully is the opening statements from the Obama-Romney debate.
Welcome to you both. Let's start the economy, segment one, and let's begin with jobs. What are major differences between the two of you about how you would go about creating new jobs? You have 2 minutes. Each of you have 2 minutes to start. A coin toss is determined. Mr. President, you go first.
Well, thank you very much, Jim, for this opportunity. I want to thank Governor Romney and the University of Denver for your hospitality.
I do have to say I like this quieter Obama a lot better than the one that continues to talk. I'm going to let this clip play out for us here. There may be some audio problem within the clip, and the audio may come back on. The source of this was the New York Times. They posted on their YouTube channel this entire debate, and I went and cut it up a couple of times, and apparently somewhere between there and here, there's a problem, but the fact that it cuts out at the exact same point and the clip still has 3 minutes to go leads me to believe that the problem is with the original source, which I didn't listen to, frankly, all the way through. I just picked a starting point and an ending point. I didn't re-listen to their opening statements. I watched the thing live once was enough. Listening to it again, I figured here on the air, would be more than enough torture than to listen to it three or four times. So there may be an audio issue with the New York Times posting that I didn't catch here on this opening statement. If it comes back on with these clips, we'll know that.
Get us into this mess, or
there it is.
Embrace a new economic patriotism that says America does best when the middle class does best. And I'm looking forward to having that debate.
Governor Romney, 2 minutes.
Thank you, Jim. It's an honor to be here with you, and I appreciate the chance to be with the president. I'm pleased to be at the University of Denver. I appreciate their welcome and also the Presidential Commission on these debates. And congratulations to you, Mr. President, on your anniversary. I'm sure this was the most romantic place you could imagine here with me. So I congratulations. This is obviously a very tender topic. I've had the occasion over the last couple of years of meeting people across the country. I was in Dayton, Ohio, and a woman grabbed my arm, and she said, I've been out of work since May. Can you help me? Ann yesterday was at a rally in Denver, and a woman came up to her with a baby in her arms and said, Ann, my husband has had 4 jobs in 3 years, part-time jobs. He's lost his most recent job, and we've now just lost our home. Can you help us? And the answer is yes, we can help, but it's going to take a different path, not the one we've been on, not the one the president describes as a top-down cut taxes for the rich. That's not what I'm going to do. My plan has 5 basic parts. 1, get us energy independent, North American energy independent. That creates about 4 million jobs. 2, open up more trade, particularly in Latin America. Crack down on China if and when they cheat. 3, make sure our people have the skills they need to succeed and the best schools in the world. We're far away from that now. 4, get us to a balanced budget. 5, champion small business. It's small business that creates the jobs in America. And over the last 4 years, small business people have decided that America may not be the place to open a new business because new business startups are down to a 30-year low. I know what it takes to get small business growing again, to hire people. Now, I'm concerned that the path that we're on has just been unsuccessful. The president has a view very similar to the view he had when he ran 4 years ago, that a bigger government, spending more, taxing more, regulating more, if you will, trickle-down government would work. That's not the right answer for America. I'll restore the vitality that gets America working again. Thank you.
Mr. President, please.
And there you have Flip-Flop Romney's opening statement, although for some reason the New York Times audio there cut out Barack Hussein Obama de Mombasa's opening statement. The tone of the debate didn't change a whole lot from those opening statements. You saw them arguing about basically the same thing. There was a good section in there where Obama and Romney were arguing back and forth over health care. Now, see, Obama's goal with this was to look presidential, to look like he had a more nuanced, detailed, well-thought-out approach, and to make Romney look like he was just slinging campaign rhetoric without substance. And he made that point multiple times throughout the debate. He made the point that Romney, when you push him on specifics, has nothing really to offer. Now, he characterized in this opening statement, which we didn't get to hear, he characterized Romney's plan as $5 trillion in cuts for the super wealthy, $2 trillion in additional military spending that the military didn't ask for, and an additional $1 trillion in spending for something else, I forget now, totaling $8 trillion. But at the same time, Romney says he's going to do all this. He says he's going to cut the deficit, and he's not going to burden the middle class. And he's going to pay for all this by closing loopholes. And Obama made the point, and he did it effectively, that there aren't enough loopholes to close to come up with $8 trillion. And so it went back to Romney to give specifics. And Romney sounded, and this is kind to him, Romney sounded like Ralph Cramden trying to explain to Alice where he'd been. I'm gonna. No concrete anything during that description. Just more platitudes, more I've got a plan. And Obama did a very good job of making Romney look like a politician, like someone who's trying to be slick, someone who has no substance, someone who's got some decent rhetoric, but when it gets down to the business of actually governing, has nothing to stand on. And the other thing he needed to do that he did well was on Obamacare. Everybody knew going into this that Romney had to criticize Obamacare because most of the American public is opposed to Obamacare. They're opposed to the way our healthcare system is run in general. They may not know the real root of the problem comes back from the 30s with the government's wage and price controls, which basically handed control of the medical field to the insurance companies, because companies back then had a wage control placed upon them. They couldn't pay their best employees what they thought they were worth, but they could offer them free health care and get around this wage control. And so they started to offer to their best employees free health care. And then realizing, and this was part of the plan when they created the loophole was created to skew the economy in this way. They realized, small businesses, that they didn't have the resources to manage a health care program, and so they farmed it out to insurance companies. And over the course of 70 years, 80 years, these insurance companies have come to control and dominate the totality of the healthcare field because they have the money and they make the rules on who gets it and what treatments you can get, what treatments you can't get, what's a necessary test and what's not. That's now been turned over to the death panels. It's now been turned over under Obamacare to a group of people who are going to pull out their Woolhouse charts and determine that 74-year-olds don't need any additional treatment because on a cost-benefit analysis, we may only save them for 18 months, and we could use those resources somewhere else to save somebody else's life for 48 months. And so at this arbitrary cutoff point, this treatment is not going to be available on the government plan to this particular cross-section of people. Now, what Obama did effectively, they didn't talk about that very much. They talked about the death panel. They didn't call it a death panel. And they had enough obfuscation in the discussion to confuse the average voter so they don't see it as a death panel. But what Obama did effectively, and the Republicans really helped with the candidate they selected, he painted Obamacare as the exact same thing as Romney Care. Now, Romney's position has been, look, we created this program and it worked for Massachusetts. The socialism worked for Massachusetts, but socialism won't work for the whole nation. Socialism should be installed by the various state governments. And Obama came back and described that the problems that Romney says he has with his program, with Obamacare, are modeled exactly after Romney Care. Because that's the best way to handle the problems of pre-existing coverages, et cetera, et cetera. And to those 14% that this debate matters to, who, if they watch it, will be starting to determine their vote based on it, they saw Romney is throwing stones at a glass house. Here's Romney. He's got Romney Care in Massachusetts. It was good enough for him then. But because the other side's proposing Obamacare, even though it's very, very similar and taken from his plan and almost identical in every respect, now he has problems with it. He was for it before he was against it. Now that's why, hands down, no question about it, Barack Hussein Obama de Mombasa slam dunked this debate. It wasn't even close. Now, the people who listen to Sean Hannity and Mike Huckabee and Dennis Miller are going to think Romney won because they're watching a different debate. They're listening for Romney to talk about giving small businesses what they need and those platitudes that they want to hear without the specifics. They hear those platitudes, and they so want to believe that Mitt Romney is the next Ronald Reagan that they're willing to overlook the fact that Romney has no specifics and that his plan, if you want to call it that, isn't a plan at all. It's an amalgam. It's a concoction of sound bites. The Republican base likes the following 38 sound bites. Let's put them all together in a plan. Where are the specifics of your plan? There are no specifics. It's just a bunch of sound bites that sound good together. Push him on any of the issues, he can't defend it. And Obama did a very good job of calling attention to that, 14% who's watching. Now, on the other hand, the Obama folks, if you like Obama, God help you, but if you like Obama, you went into the debate and you saw Obama win. You saw him get Romney. He got Romney on flip-flopping, on not being specific. And so it's really, I think what they're doing with the coverage, I didn't watch anything on Fox, but I'm sure Hannity says that Romney won. And having watched a little bit of the, literally 5 minutes of the MSNBC coverage, and that was Chris Matthews' rant, it looks like what they're doing with their propaganda networks, and remember, this is all World Wrestling Federation style politics. It's all set up and contrived to control your viewpoint on these matters. You have the conservative networks pandering to their conservative base, telling them Romney won the debate. Okay. This 14% isn't watching either Fox or MSNBC, so it's fairly irrelevant what they say. You have the folks on MSNBC, they're not saying Romney won because his ideas and his policies are better. Their spin, and I think Chris Matthews, as much as I dislike him most of the time, did a pretty good job of this. His spin was that Obama lost the debate because he failed to point out how much better he was than Romney. He let Romney get away with talking about $716 billion in cuts to Medicare, which Paul Ryan's plan is actually for. Now, I don't think Obama missed that. It's just that Chris Matthews has to come out and have an argument for why Obama lost, because that's apparently the script. They've agreed upon this particular script, that Obama lost this debate. Now, the Republicans say he lost it. The Fox News says he lost it because Romney has better policies, because Romney wants to cut taxes, and Romney schooled him. MSNBC says Romney won because Obama didn't fight hard enough. Now, both of those are lines of bullshit, frankly, and they're not real. What's real is that 14% that's undecided saw two candidates. They saw Romney flipping and flopping back and forth, unable to give specifics. They saw Obama measured, confident, calm, cool, and collected, admitting that problems exist in the country, admitting that things are still bad, that he has not solved all of the problems, but then somehow figuring out a way to juxtapose his vision of what to do over the next 4 years with Romney's vision of what to do over the next 4 years. And to those 14%, he made the case that you have a choice between the arguments that were made by George Bush about the economy, about handing the reins back to someone like Mitt Romney who will create another Enron, or you have the choice to stick with Barack Hussein Obama de Mombasa, who passed the largest regulations on Wall Street in the history of the nation. Now, never mind the fact that the Wall Street bankers wrote the regulations on Wall Street, and they were written to help the folks in Wall Street, not the folks on Main Street. But nevertheless, Romney wasn't able to come back and say anything about it because, frankly, the same people are paying his bills. It was a political game where there wasn't a whole lot of reality there, but within the consensus reality of the Republicans and Democrats, where they choose which facts are real and which facts are not, in that consensus reality, Obama won hands down, slam dunk, not even close. There wasn't an undecided voter out there that I think could watch that and could see that Romney was presidential material. If they did, they probably weren't all that undecided. They were leaning heavily towards Romney. There's a lot of people out there right now who are looking for something to vote for because there's nothing on this horizon that looks appealing. Romney and Obama are not good choices. Gary Johnson and Virgil Good are both imperfect choices. And so you've got a lot of people who want to find something good about Romney, want to find a reason that Romney's worth voting for. And so some of those people are going to say they were undecided until this debate. And now that they've seen Romney say the same thing he said for the past year and a half. They didn't really say anything different this debate than they've said for the past year and a half, except Romney did get caught backtracking on his plan. And Obama made a good point of this. For 18 months, he's been saying his plan is to cut these trillions of dollars. Now, with 30 days to go before the election, he's changed his tune. That goes right to the heart of Romney's credibility. Even Republicans don't like that he banned guns, but now says he'll be a pro-gun president. That he passed Obamacare, but now says he'll replace it with Romneycare. On that key issue of credibility, Obama just slam dunked him. On the issue of who had the better, who looked more presidential, it wasn't even close. It wasn't even close. Romney looked like a school kid. Obama looked like a president. How the Kenyan can look more like a president than the guy from Michigan, I don't know. But that's what happened. I know. Some of you say that Mitt's actually from Mexico because that's where his father was born. But there was no doubt that Barack Hussein Obama de Mombasa looked a lot more presidential than flip-flop Romney. Join us here tomorrow on Open Line Friday here on the Jim Dunzing Show, featuring opinions so good they ought to be yours, with more coverage of the presidential horse race and real news throughout the nation and the world. And, of course, your calls on Open Line Friday here as we begin the broadcast day on Freedomizer Radio.
Too many people in America fear their government, and the government is being run by too many powerful agencies like the IRS and others. I think it's time the people take the country back through their representative government.
Are you intrigued by the paranormal and psychic phenomena? Is there something wrong with how the society operates? Do you believe you're here to do something more? Do you feel your freedom's been stripped by the government? Are you concerned about your health and the environment you live in? Join me, Joanna Johnston, spiritual warrior, psychic empath, and secure party creditor on Illuminating Minds every Thursday morning, 10 a.m. to noon Pacific Standard Time, 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on freedomizerradio.com, and journey further down the rabbit hole with me. See you there.
You are listening to Freedomizer Radio, where freedomizers freedomize freedom.
Good day, everybody. This is Joanna Johnston from Illuminating Minds on freedomizerradio.com. It's good to be here today. It's always good to be here, and it's always good that the weather is a lot cooler today. We are getting tropical weather, so it's wonderful. And the more tropical weather we get, as far as like little rain goes, I'm in a better mood. However, I'm not going to be on too much longer. I'm only going to be on for an hour, because I have family members that are really sick and they really need my attention. And I feel so bad because, you know, no matter where you go, there's always a sickness, right? And my husband and my daughter got really hit with a bad flu, and they've been sick for about over, like, almost 2 weeks now. So Mama Joanna has to help them out here. But, however, I'm doing my best. I'm on here because there's a lot of great information I wish to share with you guys. I don't care, even if I'm a little sick, I might sound a little weird in the throat and the voice, but I have to bring this out to you guys because it's very important. I've been looking around, I've been finding a lot of great, not great information, but kind of gnarly information, if you will. If you've heard about the Texas students treated like cattle with mandatory RFID tags. Yeah, it's pretty sad. And so far from what I'm seeing is that the students, the parents are fighting back. But I thought that was just absolutely ridiculous. You could find it on Alex Jones' channel. I mean, that's where I pretty much get a lot of my updates. He does a really good job in keeping you updated and informed on what's really going on out there in the real world. You know, not like this, you know, sugar down news to make it sound like, you know, everything's fine and dandy and someone else is the enemy when we all know who the real enemies are, right? So I want to read this out to you guys. If you've ever heard of students and parents at two San Antonio schools are in revolt over a program that forces kids to wear RFID tracking name tags, which are used to pinpoint their location on campus as well as outside school premises. Students at John Jay High School and Anson Jones Middle School will be mandated to wear the tags from today, which will be used to track them on campuses as well as when they entered and leave school. Andrea Hernandez is leading a group of students who refuse to wear the tags because, in her words, it makes me uncomfortable. It's an invasion of my privacy, she told KSN.com. Hernandez is being backed by parents and privacy experts like Dr. Catherine Abrecht, and who point out that the spy chips are more about making money than keeping students safe. Sounds pretty familiar, right? It's all about the money, I think. As the school claims, by reducing truancy and tardiness, the school stands to net $2 million in state funds. Hernandez points out that the system is all but useless because students will just leave their tag in their locker or hand it to a friend to avoid being monitored. Parents and students have railed to organize a protest against the spy chips, which is set to take place today. Hernandez also fears that the RFID chips could be used to track students. Outside of school, a valid concern given past examples of how such technology has been abused by school officials. In 2010, the Lower Merion School District in Pennsylvania used school-issued laptops to spy on kids on their own home. The controversy ignited after student Blake Robbins was disciplined for improper behavior in his home. It turned out that school officials had installed software on the laptops that used the computer's webcam to send images back to the school server every 15 seconds. Hernandez also pointed out that sexual predators could use the tracking system to stalk children because the RFID tag continues to send a signal even after students have left school premises. Wow. This is where the country is really going. I think it's more of an excuse to really get the RFID chip involved in the way. And, you know, of course, they have it already in our driver's license, you know, the enhanced driver's license. They also have the chip to track people down. And it doesn't feel very safe, does it? It's just not a good feeling at all. So, yeah, with that, there's just a lot of people standing up. I'm going to put the link here in the chat room, trying to get into Freedomizer right now. And that way I can share this with you guys, and you guys can check it out. But people are standing up. They're standing tall. And I remember one lady, she basically put her foot down and said, hey, you know, all the Jews were numbered. You know, all the Jews had numbers on them back in Nazi Germany, so what makes this different? You know, you're trying to number all your children. You're trying to number everybody to track people down. That's not too cool, you know. So, anyways, that is just a really sad thing. But anyway, I'm going ahead right now, and I'm going to be putting this in the chat room so you guys can check it out. There you go. Yeah. So I wanted to go ahead and share that with you guys. It's horrible. Very horrible. And also very interesting news, in Cuba, there's a news basically stating that, you know, Cuba is a very, you know, Catholic, highly Catholic country. You know, the people practice Catholicism big time there, supposedly. Well, the Pope has got some issues on his hands because he's going to find it very tough to fight against the Santeria crowd who also operate in Cuba. Now, Santeria, of course, if you haven't heard, they are, you know, so it's a mixed religion of African religion and Catholicism. But they use syncretism, which is to hide their saints. You know, they would pray to their saints, but really in all actuality, they would pray to their angels. We don't call them gods. They're called Orishas, but we don't call them gods. They're called angels because they only pray to really one God, which they call God, and Alofi is like Jesus. So they always look at God as like the whole, you know, he's the one that you go to, and then he's got the angels that you go to as well, just like a lot of other Christianity. But the funny thing, I think, is that, you know, a lot of the people, they're taking back their culture, their belief, because, you know, African religions is very, very ancient because they're like the first people that were here on this planet. So, I mean, we're talking about the shamans, like the Native Americans, you know, it's a very earth-based religion. It's very earth-based and very powerful. And a lot of people go to these shamans because they want to be healed. You know, they've been sick for things, or if even law, believe it or not, you guys, even law, like problems, they get involved in legal issues, you know, and nothing the lawyer can help them with. So, you know, if Secure Party Creditor ain't going to answer your prayers, you can always go to a Santero, and he'll actually take care of that because there's a lot of successes with that. And it's not really the religion. It's mostly based on people's beliefs. When you believe in something so much, you can make it happen. And you can do that with your own mind. You could do that. You could believe in a statue that's going to help you. You could put all that belief in it, and what you're doing is you're creating an egregore to make it happen for you. That's what I believe anyway. You put so much, you know, belief in something that you can make something happen, you know. But I do believe in the forces. I do believe in the forces of God and the angels that are there to help us out if you ask for their help. You know, too much, we're too busy trying to do things on our own, and sometimes it doesn't always happen that way because the world, the planet, we operate in different dimensions, and it is all divine. It is all connected. We're all one. It is all connected. So either way, you cannot separate the two. But anyway, going back to the Cuba thing, so the Pope is flying out of his way right now because he's losing a lot of his clients, which are the believers of the Catholic faith, and they're turning to Santeria now. They're not getting their answers met, and they're like, hey, heck with you, man. We're leaving. We're going back to our ancient ways and our ancient beliefs, and we're, you know, and it's hurting the Vatican right now. So you see the power of the people. They're taking their power back, which I think is absolutely awesome. You know, I mean, it could be any type of belief or religion. If it's people that are, you know, something that has to do with our nature and following nature and all that. That's the way to go. Also, let me see here. I think that's pretty much the news for now. And I wanted to share with you guys. And, oh, yeah, if you've heard about the earthquake that happened just recently in Colombia, it was, I think it's 7.6 or something. I don't know if anyone got hurt or not, but it seems like there's some shivering, shaking going on in that area, which isn't too far from Ecuador, huh? But you think about it, it's right below Panama, which is right next to Costa Rica, and Costa Rica's got tons of earthquakes, so it's not too strange, right? Anyway, I wanted to go ahead and get my mentor on again on the line, Jaguar, who has something very amazing to share with you all as well. And this is regarding taxes and how to legally, what to legally do, what type of legal procedures that you can take or do that can remove you from having to pay taxes. And we're talking legal. Very exciting information for you all, especially those who are just ready to jump the ship and leave the country because you're being taxed. And it's not only the tax thing. Again, if you're being taxed by a just nation that wants to help people, that wants to give back to the community, you know, here's my money. Take 80%, please. If you're going to help this community be better, take it, you know. But if you're going to take this money for war and other things, it's going to karmically affect you in the end because knowing that you're using your taxes to kill other people in other countries, you're being karmically affected as well, okay? And that's a hardship right there. But we have a choice, and we can change things right now. So I'm going to go ahead and get him on. Okay, Jaguar, you're on the air. How are you doing this morning? This morning.
Yeah, good morning, good
time.
Afternoon. Can you hear me?
Yes, I hear you loud and clear.
Oh, it's a beautiful Vancouver fall day. It's probably low 60s out, a little overcast, lots of sunshine, so it's nice crisp in the air. It's a perfect autumn day.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Sounds great. Feels like I just want to go get some apple cider, hot apple cider cinnamon drink that I used to get at the bookstores. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Exactly. That's kind of a free and relaxing day. So it's good at this end of the hood.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I hear you on that one. So what can you tell me? You're telling me some really awesome information that's just going to really knock the socks out of our listeners, and I'm really excited that you brought it up about the tax evasion. And what can you tell them about this, and how can you help them?
All right. Okay. Drew's been asking me for quite some time to come on and talk about taxes. Now, the reason I can talk about taxes is I'm an investigator. And what I do is I investigate the tax agents, to tell you the truth. And I do this on behalf of small corporations. And during my process of learning how to do this on behalf of small corporations, and all we're doing is asking the tax agents to come clean, we found some amazing information out. So lo and behold, in North America, there has been a system that has been in play for at least since 1984 in Canada and about 1964 in the States. It works like this. The government counts on the fact that you hear all the time about the high taxes on income. What they forget to tell you is about the PET theory. What exactly is the PET theory? The PET theory works like this. The governments of Mexico, Canada, and the United States of America have three revenue generators of which they obtain their funds from to operate the country. The reason they call it PET is because the first fund is prosperity funds, the second one is enterprise funds, the third one is taxation. Taxation is the third revenue generator, and it is the weakest generator. There are only 13% of the total collected for revenues for the government that actually come from taxation, and guess who pays most of that? The average salary worker. Now, when you want to legally have a zero income tax liability, you can depend on the fact that the IRS and the CRA have already provided you an opportunity. Now, how does this work? Because of the fact that there are three revenue generators and you only know of one revenue generator, you think everything is taxation. It's not true. Not everything is taxation. Not everything is an income tax. So this is how the Bank of America, this is how GE, this is how probably 50% of the North American Fortune 500 companies pay zero in their corporate taxes. It operates on loan proceeds. Loan proceeds, there is a zero taxation. So to make it real simple, for every single country on the planet that is a high income tax country, we'll take America, we'll take Canada, Australia, England, and then we'll compare it to something like Bahamas, Bermudas, Cayman Islands. What's the difference between these two? The difference between these two is that while Canada, America, Australia have a high rate of taxation on income, and no kidding, you can hit 80% in the right country, there is zero taxes on loan proceeds. So it's real simple. The countries like Bahamas, Cayman Islands, operate on a priority basis where they operate on loan proceeds. That's why there's no income tax. That's what they're called, income tax-free zones. However, we have a better advantage legally in the box on how to perform this. Now, it's something that's most unique, and with that, I'm going to ask Drew if anybody here has got any questions before we dive deep, but this is essentially how it works. It's not a myth. It's not mysticism. It's not based on religious interpretations. It's just based on good old account science information, account science architecture, as I like to call it, simply accounting. If you have a high rate of income tax on taxation, then you must have a zero income tax, and it doesn't really, you don't need to be a rocket scientist to learn how this works. So with that, I'm going to pass it back to you, Drew, see if there's any questions, and then we'll dive deep as far as you want to go so you'll understand how it all works. Are we there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I am.
Can you hear me okay? Okay, awesome.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, right now I'm just posting, the video that you sent, a little more about the oath as well, to get people, you know, ready. But no one seems to have any questions. It's very interesting. They're like, it's like their chat thing just went to a halt. Like, when you started talking, everything just went to a halt. I think
okay.
They're listening to you. Shelly, Shelly, do you have a question, girl? She's like, hey, Joanna. So anybody have a question, please go ahead and call 347-324-3704. Please dial that number and give us a ring. If you have any questions at all, please call in. Also, you can go on the chat room at www.freedomizerradio.com. And while Jaguar talks, if I see any questions, that's fine. I'll stop him, and I will just kind of interrupt a little and see if he can answer your question. But so far, Jaguar, I'm not getting anybody right now at the moment.
Okay, good, because when it comes to taxes, people are one of three categories. A, they're scared shitless, and we shouldn't even be talking about it. You're going to get shot just for thinking this way. Two, I think this is the greatest discovery since God invented sliced bread. And three, holy shit, you found out too that it works? Shh, don't tell anybody. The neighbors will think you're crazy. Okay, it's true. The neighbors will think you're crazy. Now, here's a little something. This is not just a story to amuse you. I actually have a series of five tax forms. 2007, 2008, 2009, 2010, 2011. I carry them wherever I go when I've got to run around town doing stuff because they all state the same thing. I filed a legal zero income tax form, and the government audited and reassessed me and audited me all at the same time. Lucky fellow. All within 90 days because I'm such a priority risk, and every single one comes back exactly the same year after year after year after year. And what does it say? The government says to me that I didn't actually make zero. No, They disagree with me. They do not agree that I made zero. They said you made a dollar. I says, great, thank you very much. I made $1. So wherever I go, people say, how much you making? I said, a dollar. That's all the government says I'm making, a buck. That's it. Now, what is the taxes owed on a dollar? And the answer is nothing. There's nothing owed on a taxes. And this is legal. It works like this. Okay, so you're all ready? So in order for you to learn how employees and self-employed business owners and the like can get salary and business income tax free, all you need to do is discover three things. First thing you need to discover is phrases, terms and phrases. That's right. Now, it works like this. The fact that tax laws in the United States differ from those in Canada means that this system works exactly the way in both countries. You see, in both the United States and Canada, the tax treaties with many global partners means that the number one North American government-approved legal zero income tax strategy works because of the fact incorporated and leased employees do not pay a tax on income. Now, as there is no imposition of a tax on income at this stage because you don't qualify as an income. That's why there's no tax to be imposed on income because you no longer qualify. You qualify as loan proceeds. I know, it sounds strange, doesn't it? Loan proceeds, how does that work? Loan proceeds. Well, it works very simple. If one will use the Canadian version right now, if one goes to the Canadian statutes and legislations, we'll find out that our fiat currency, our notes, are considered to be first charges upon the assets of the Bank of Canada. First charges on the assets of the Bank of Canada literally means that the fiat dollars are either A, encumbrances, B, liens, or C, financial obligations. That's it. All they are. These are what we call units of exchange. Now, if you understand or you're working with a company that understands that the very cash that you got in your hand at the most technical point of discernment, all you've got is either an encumbrance, a lien, or a financial obligation, obviously you must have a loan proceed in your hands. That's basically how it works. So the fact that the United States leased employees means the same thing as the incorporators in Canada means both are taxed in the same way. So leased employees and incorporated employees are exactly the same thing. Now, Drew has dropped off a little, perhaps a YouTube link that you can take a look at. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to introduce you to a company that I came across in 2004. It was my job to investigate them to see if they were living up to their obligations. It turned out they did. And then I proceeded to do investigations with them on their behalf for certain clients, and what we found out is that the Canadian authorities were a little lax in having their oaths in place, which then changed their obligations in law to abusive procedures. And so there's a little YouTube out there called Canadian Tax Abuse in Victoria. This was done on behalf of a company called Greycliff. And what it does is it teaches you how to understand that one of the due diligence processes that you can utilize is simply...
Yep, I sent that out there. I sent that out there for everyone to see.
Yeah, now it's like only 2 minutes and 56 seconds, and all you're going to see is 10 different agents whose oaths had either an error or omission, which technically means they're no longer working for the government as a valid agent. And this was posted in 2007 simply at the benefit of the participants that worked with the company Greycliff, and because I'd done the investigation on behalf of the company, I put that up there on their behalf. Now, in 2008, Google took over YouTube, and that channel's now locked and frozen. So let's get straight to the good stuff. of exactly does this work. And now, the great thing is I was listening a little bit to the fellow who had the show before this, Jim's show, and they were talking about Mitt Romney and Obama. And I'm saying is that, you know, it's funny that they didn't close off the end of the show about getting back to Ron Paul, who's kind of a single track here. But Ron Paul's got the good idea. You don't have to have an income tax in working now because the system is. So here we go. Step one. Now, when you're the kind of person that becomes a leased employee, then you're an employee working through a service corporation. Now, the fact that you work at your present place of employment, now, whether this could be your own business if you're self-employed, means your services are obtained through a third-party company. That's very important here. It's got to be a bona fide third party. So it can't be your family members. Can't be that. It's got to be a bona fide third party. Now, when you're the kind of person who becomes an employee of the bona fide third-party company and your services are provided back to your present employer, and if this can be your own business, then it's done in the same way. It's basically operating as a temporary services company, provides the services of a temporary worker to a business that needs an additional purpose temporarily. For employers, think about this. You're outsourcing liabilities. That's basically what you're doing. So let's move on to step two now. Now, you have a salary, and the fact that your salary, including the amount for the employer share of payroll deductions, means that payment by your current employer is to you in trust for the third-party company which provides your services to the business where you're working at. And this is where you begin to learn about agent, guardian, and trustee. For all those who want to work this down, this is basically how all business works. Now, it's a fact that with the leased employee, when the business that currently employs you remits you, your tax repay means there's no payroll deductions. You no longer qualify for payroll deductions. This is standard business, and there's a lot of companies that do this. The thing is, most standard companies won't tell you about this. They like to save this for the CEOs of the Fortune 500 companies. I like to save this for the Fortune 500 companies. They don't want salary workers to know this. But yeah, it's right there on the books. Now, the fact that although the tax-free money goes from your current employer directly to you means notionally, it passes from your current employer to the bona fide third party as a transfer of a liability and then to you. Now, this is the part to pay attention to. It's the transfer of a liability. That's it. That's the whole magic, the tax-free income in North America, is because you understand that when you get a paycheck, essentially speaking, according to the witness of a third party, all you got was a transfer of liability. That's it. You didn't get a transfer of an
asset.
Wow. Yeah, it's only when you agree, when you sign the back of your salary check, when you sign it as is, where he is, without any extra information put down, just sign your name, John Doe, you've agreed to be in possession of an asset at this point. However, a check in and of itself is a mechanism to convey funds, a transfer mechanism. That's all it is. It's transferring. It's called a substitute for currency, and this is the other trick. That's why it's a transfer of liability. All accountants will actually tell you this. All I have to do is ask them, when you receive a check, did you receive an asset? No, you did not. Because it says pay to the order of it. So all you got was something, and all you're doing is making a deposit of a substitute for currency for credit of units of account, which may be exchangeable for non-redeemable legal tender currency, and that's it. That is the major thing. So that's step two. The fact that the income tax law point of view, the tax-free income, is a loan proceeds means it is the transfer of the liability and is considered to be the third-party bona fide agents for an instant. In that instant, they own all of the liability. You don't. So step three. Now, the fact that when you receive the transfer of the liability in trust from the bona fide third-party agent means that the transfer has a zero income tax liability capacity as there is no legal tax on the transfers of a liability. Now, the fact your third-party bona fide agent lends this transfer of a liability to you means that this loan is now has its security by the assignment of your salary by the third-party bona fide agent owes you. And that's how you achieve the zero income tax position. I'll go over that again. This is the nuts and bolts. It's not rocket science. Okay? There is a fact that the bona fide third party is going to lend the transfer of the liability to you as the loan is secured by the assignment of your salary. That's fairly it. I know it sounds difficult, but in the world of legislation and the world of accounts, that's all you need to know. For the agents that you can work with, already know this. Most tax agents around the country already aware of this. They just don't want you to know about it because you think liabilities and assets are the same things as debts and credits. They're not. Now, the fact this lending of money is done notionally means the event is recorded as a bookkeeping entry insofar as it happens instantly, which means at the end of the day, the reason you can do this is that you have a residual remittance as opposed to an income tax. So let's go over this. A, the very fact that the third party owes you the salary for the work performed means that instead of paying you a taxable salary, it lends you the money as a loan. B, the security for the loan is the legal obligation by the third party to pay you the salary of the wage assignment. C, the fact the transaction has its completion means you owe the loan back to the third party, and the third party owes a salary of equal amount to you. This is where your wonderful little world of set-off and adjustment comes from. So the net effect is no one really owes anyone anything anyways because the offset entitles you to tax-free money. Now, the fact that you have gotten your liability, which you call money, from the business where you work tax-free means any interest that was charged on that loan by the third party is offset by the equal interest charged by you on the unpaid salary. And that's where the interest comes in. And this is the very same trick that every Fortune 500 company worth its salt, Bank of America, GE, you check it out, start going through your Google, they all get zero corporate tax position, and this is exactly how they do it. Now, the more that you can see all this happens instantly, you're going to just be able to discover why you have a tax-free pay, and the more you discover that this is a legitimate system, a legitimate program, and a legitimate strategy will help you fit into a whole new world. You can be tax-free because, you know, they say that death and taxes are absolute. Well, we just showed you. They're not. Taxes, in and of itself, is an illusion. This is how they get around with it. There's two other generators, and you can receive your salary, which means
wow.
Never owe a tax on it. And this is legit. This is legit. We'll throw up some links here as you can get in, and we can go through the nitty-gritty, but that's essentially how the corporate 500s work. It can be used by a small businessman. It can be used by anybody. I myself have been using the formula for 32 years, just so you know. Have I ever been to court? Yes, I have. I've been to court numerous times on this. Absolutely.
How do they react? I got to hear this. How do they react when you told them about this?
Oh, it was the same thing as always. Your argument is too metaphysical for us. We don't understand. Of course you don't understand. It's your system. And I'm just saying is that I could never possibly be in the possession of an income because all I ever get was loan proceeds. You give me cash, great, good for you. Cash, cash, cash. It's either an encumbrance, a lien, or a financial obligation. The fact it's an encumbrance, The fact that it's a lien, the fact it's a financial obligation is something that you already know exists. Therefore, how could I possibly be in possession of an income? I got a loan proceed. That's it. So I
yeah, income's in the future, correct? Like you're saying, income is in the future.
That's
so therefore, it has nothing to do with the present moment.
Exactly. That's right. It's a future event, and an income, actually speaking, if you go into their own laws, an income is a event outside of the estate. It comes from the estate. An actual income comes from the estate. Now, the original purpose of the income was to do a self-injury amongst the Lord. So basically back prior to the 1600s, basically this is how the kings and queens and the monarchs kept the lords from getting together and uniting to overtake them, is that this is literally equivalent of falling on your sword. Now, in modern-day economics, macroeconomics, microeconomics, there are only $3. There are the units of exchange dollars, which we currently have known as currency. There are asset-backed dollars, and there's bullion-backed dollars, okay? And this, in and of itself, is a loan proceed. And IRS and CRA already have this. You can find this. Incorporated employee, leased employee, just Google it. You'll find it right there. The only requirement is you have to have a bona fide third party in between, and it's preferable to have somebody who actually knows this system. The little YouTube link that was put up was simply to let you know that this is the keenest way to protect your privacy. It is the easiest way to be technically correct and legally prudent, and without suffering any slant from the government that you're trying to be a freeloading citizen, not paying your taxes and coming up with all these marvelous, unique ideas.
Names. All these names. They got like a whole list for people that are, you know, that are independent and want to think outside the box. They got sovereign citizen. They got free man on the land, right? They got all these names to point you, to target you with.
Now, Drew brings this up because we were talking just before the show. As I sat up to about 2 o'clock in the morning, going through about an 80-page judgment report out of the Alberta courts. And again, these are mostly tax issues. And there was probably maybe 100 different cases in there, and they're all talking about the leading so-called groups. They actually have a name for this now, OPCA. That's right. I forget what the first one is, but the second one is pseudo-legal commerce arguments, and they're dividing them into cluster groups. For the Canadians, one of the big fall downs here was a fellow by the name of Russ Perisky promoting the natural person. He just got slammed. He's doing 3 years. He's got a couple clients that got slammed, and they're hot on the case of Robert Menard, Robin J. Belanger, and a whole bunch of others. And the reason I read these case laws is I want to see what's being presented in the courts when I know that if it's a tax issue, it's about accounts. That's all it is. It's funds on the left side of the account. It's funds on the right side of the account. If there are debits and credits and you believe that there's a debt in issue, then it's real simple. We need to know where the assets and the liabilities are so we can figure out where the legal equity is. And this is a system that's in. So the courts are kind of laughing in one sense at people who are coming in here and not really going back and reading the rules. If you know how to read the rules, just like the Fortune 500 companies do, you can do this trick all day long, every day. Nobody's even going to give you a phone call. But they're beginning to take people who have part of this formula, but not all of this formula, and they're beginning to brand them. Well, there's a big surprise. I've been doing it since the 60s in my home. And this is where
okay.
Secured party creditor is one of the fixes. I'll stop there.
Oh, anyway, I was going to ask, there's a couple on here that I've talked to for a while. They're good friends of mine, and I'm asking them if they have any questions for you guys. you guys are free to get on the show. If you don't mind calling in, it'd be wonderful if you can ask Jaguar something, because I know you've talked to me, you've said some things, but I'm not able to answer the questions. I wish to God I could, but that's what Jaguar's for. So anything you guys want to ask, from what I'm reading here, it says something about Says, Drena, did you and Jag say in a past show that some people you and Jag know that received checks for the decedent and estate check?
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. I've seen, I've been given the opportunity through signing disclosure agreements. I've actually seen the checks, right? And I was actually given permission to tell people that this is real. Most people actually get to that level. They just, like I said, they want to shut up and go away and not have anybody know about it. But a couple of people have had success. Says, okay, I'll tell you what, I'll let you see my checks, and you can tell people you see my checks, but you can't tell anybody who I am. And I went, yeah, okay, got it. But it is true. It does do it, because the funny thing of commerce works in a language grouping that is pretty strange, but once you get the language grouping down, and they understand what you've done, they want to know that you are participating, because it works like this. The queen, under blood covenant oath, is taking care of the farm, so to say. Okay? And once you prove yourself to be an adult, and you can speak in her language, not your language, her language, then she will release to you your estate so you can run it. But in order to do this, you should have the acumen to do this, which means you're going to have to know something about administration. You're going to have to know something about good bookkeeping, and you're going to have to know who the players are. Who's the agent? Who's the trustee? Who's the guardian? Who's the decedent? Who's the beneficiary? And remember who's who in the zoo. Now, the easiest way to do this, rather than you try to figure out how to be all five hats, is go grab three friends. And then you get to be the beneficiary, and they can be the agent, the guardian, and the trustee for you. And then you can assign these slots back out to the government, because they have a system built in, just like the Americans and the Canadians have a system called Comprehensive Annual Financial Reports, CAFRs for the Americans, CANFRs for the Canadians. These are based on the fact that the government fails to tell you about the surplus funds. They take the budget and they put it down your throat and talk about it 24/7, and that's where they get their taxes from. Good for them. They do get taxes from budgets. Excellent. But the real coin is in prosperity and enterprise funds. That's sitting on the other two generators. You can access those through competent administrative behavior using the very same code system they've already got built up. It's a loan proceed. Perfect. How'd that loan proceed begin? It begins like this. Your name, like it or not, one way or another, is an account. And it's not the name that you think it is. It is the name that is the citizen. It is the name of the resident. And that's how they work it. So when you fill
the
out...
the resident. That's very interesting. If you can talk more about that, the resident. Very interesting.
Okay, the resident and the citizen are the key accounts here. Everything works on the resident because everything is local. For example, you can be a Canadian citizen, would be a resident elsewhere, and you are no longer beholden to the Canadian system, because the Canadians only tax residences, whereas Americans tax citizens. You can be an American citizen, but it doesn't matter where you live, you still get paid. Lucky you. You could be living in Borneo, and you could still pay taxes. There's only a few countries you can go and not pay taxes. Now, Canadians is dependent on residency. Residency is everything, and the reason it's the resident, because all things begin from source at the local level. That's why it's very important they want you to have your driver's license. That's why when you see anything that's going down, you're not talking about a state or a national implication at the front. Like, for example, the RFID chips. That was in San Antonio. That's a local event, and they're doing this for money. That's right. It's money. They're just tracking the account. The better they track the account, the more funds they make. And that's what it is.
Right. So it's all about the money. It's all about the money. Oh, Jagger, I got to stop you right now because I have to go to commercials. Yeah, and I'm having some issues with Blog Talk Radio. It's like really, really lagging right now. I don't know what it is. I've been having some issues with this for some time. But anyway, we will get back to you, and then hopefully you guys will have some questions and call on in. I'm waiting for your call, and we'll be right back.
This is Mercy. If you're listening to this message, warriors, you are the resistance. Warriors, you are not alone. There are pockets of resistance all around the planet. We are at the brink. Read about it in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. Available now at newsstands everywhere. The Sovereign is a monthly 24-page tabloid newspaper featuring incendiary content about life during wartime in the age of Obama. Warriors, keep to date every month. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. Available at newsstands everywhere. This alert is for all you boppers out there in the big city, all you street people with an ear for the action. This is Mercy. If you're listening to this message, warriors, you are the resistance. This is Mercy. Mine will be the last voice you'll ever hear. Don't be alarmed.
Hey, Freedomizers, Val Villano here. I am proud to announce the premiere of Recharge Radio, my new show right here on Freedomizer. It's Monday through Thursday from 3 to 5 Pacific. Objective journalism rising against the New World Order. Being a New World Order analysis for many years, my expertise on tactics and master plan implementation carried out by the elitists who govern our world, I base my theories on objective probability analysis on both current and past events to bring a new light of understanding in the world in which we live. I believe I have a dynamic news coverage with intel information from insiders in revealing their strategy to the public to help you prepare. Along with my superior guest interviews, I also believe that we will be taking a commanding lead in quality journalism to the airwaves right here on Freedomizer, Monday through Thursday, 3 to 5 p.m. Pacific Time. Objective journalism rising against the New World Order. Hey, cruise on over to the Whiskey Go-Go, Freedomizer's late-night comedy show on Wednesday nights from 10:30 to midnight Pacific Time. Hosted by me, Val Villano, and my co-host, Crazy Mars. We are seeking talent in comedy and music. The music we are looking for is classic rock, acid rock, hard rock, rap, pop, and blues. In comedy, we want any and all comedy skits, whether you call in live or submit by MP3. Be as creative as you want. Please submit your work at our fan page on Facebook at The Whiskey A Go-Go. So come, lift your spirits and get away from all the doom and gloom. Warning, it's raw, it's dangerous, and we will be at our best at making fun of you. No PC allowed. I'm stalking you. You never know who and when I will spoof on the air, unless you're there. So that's Wednesday night, 10:30 to midnight Pacific Time, right here on FreedomizerRadio.com. Whiskey a go-go! Whoa! Put the brakes on! Did you catch all that? Too much coffee. Freedomizer is so addicting.
You are listening to Freedomizer Radio, where Freedomizers freedomize freedom.
Hey, this is Joanna Johnson with Illuminating Minds on Freedomizer Radio, and here I have Jaguar as my mentor and as a guest on the show talking about the tax evasions and how to get out of it, which has been very exciting. You can also find the link, which is, I put it in the chat room, but I can go ahead and read it out for you all. Very good. It's Gray Cliff, G-R-A-Y, C as in cat, L-I-F-F as in Frank, .org. So you can go there, graycliff.org, with more information and ways to contact them as well to get some help. because I know there's a lot of people out there needing help right now. They're ready to just jump the Titanic ship as it's like, we need to get the hell out of the country. These tax people, you know, pretty soon they're going to want your to take your passport from you as well if you owe a little more than $20,000. I'm sorry, 50 grand. In taxes, then they want to go ahead and take your passport like they're doing with child support in any way to control the population, which is absolutely disgusting and ridiculous. But there's ways of getting out of it. And I have a couple people here, and I'm trying to figure out who is who. Anybody have a question? I'm going to go to 646.
Getting married.
You're on the air.
Hello.
Hello. You have a question? Guess not. Okay, 615, you're on the air. Do you have a question?
No, I was just listening.
Okay, good. Good for you. All right, well, I'm still waiting for people to have some questions. You have some time to, I guess you guys are fine. I guess he's basically answered all your questions, right? So it seems like that every single time. You know, I'm kind of wanting a really good someone to really ask him some questions that's really going to help out everyone else. But I guess you pretty much laid it down, Jaguar. Doesn't seem like anyone out there has any questions for you.
Okay, well, that's good to hear. And like I said, as long as the readers comprehend that the system in and of itself requires you to just learn the language a little better, understand where the rules are, because they are there. There are systems in place right now where you legally do not have to pay an income tax. It's an in-the-box process. As you actually acquaint yourself to these language structures, and that's basically what it is, it's a new language structure, then you can move to your ultimate position, which is where you have a certain immunity built in from the system. They're no longer hassling you, and you're outside the box, because the number one thing is taxes. Everybody wants to get hammered on taxes, and it's probably one of the dreariest subjects on the matter to talk about, but it is the one that has the strongest implications on everybody's lifestyle.
And it's been like that for years, many ages, and, you know, like all the way from, what do you call it, England, and all over the world. I mean, mostly England area. I mean, it's been that way. People have been running. They've even founded this country just to get away from taxes, and look what they're doing now.
And again, the only difference between now and 600 years ago is we can actually read and write now. That's all. And because
right.
we can read and write. And we, if you do take a look at this, because I've kept this as kind of my own method of running my businesses without having a tax man involved, because I was always against the fact that as a young man out running a business, well, who was the government to step in and take half my cake? I mean, they didn't do the job. They didn't do the work. They didn't
exactly.
And I kept going, why are you taking half the cake? And there's a way around.
Oh, Jaguar, okay. I have a question. There's a question finally. Finally. Someone calling in with a question. Okay. 646, you're on the air.
Hi, I'm sorry if I'm yelling. It's from the noise police in New York.
It's okay.
I can barely hear you. I'm waiting for the bus. I have a question about, I just came in the show now. So can you hear this noise?
Yeah, no, we can hear you.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's like they can make little tiny bugs and avatars, but they can't, like, put a noise, you know, function on these big trucks. And I didn't plan to talk about this. And leaf blowers, you know, but right. Okay, so my question is this. I'm someone who's lived a life mostly making less money than is in the tax bracket, and a lot of it was off the books. I'm thinking about marrying someone who's a Peruvian citizen this year. And I know nothing. I maybe have filed taxes twice in my life, really, because I made that little money. I know very little bit about it. How would you refer me? Where would you direct me to see what's up with that? I also really don't want to, I think I'm going to have the courage to refuse that TSA thing at the airport and maybe get a I don't know. Never mind that. But what's the deal with passports? Am I in a dead spot to get a passport if I don't have a current driver's license, even though I'm not driving? I mean, what do I need a driver's license for if I'm not driving?
Hey, Doug, you want to answer that?
Well, okay, first of all, you've got a couple questions all in there. In regards to the taxes and the fact that you haven't filed because you're a low-income bracket, the easiest thing to do is simply ask the IRS for the years that you need to file and then file them. That's just a standard route. As to your other questions about defying TSA, honestly, they're a pretty big group, and they know what they're doing. Defying TSA, you want to do this from more than a liberal point of view. They're a worthwhile team to take on. They know what they're doing. If you're going to confront them, you should become acquainted with the local rules of the airport you're at and the state that you're going to be doing that in regards to sexual predator ships and whether they're accosting you for sexual predator styles, warrants, behavior demonstrated within the state. TSA has been getting away with an awful lot of shit simply because the citizens aren't stepping up to the plate and looking at their local rules, state level and federal level. What exactly is a sexual predator ship attack? What exactly is it not? Because I'm pretty sure TSA qualifies all the time. And to confront them, remember, this is a group that's got no problem beating up 80-year-old women in wheelchairs, molesting babies. I mean, we're talking a pretty decent group who
pretty
are...
Sickening.
But no,
pretty sickening. Pretty sickening, yeah. I mean, there's ways of... I've dealt with it, and I basically told them, look, I opt out, you go ahead and search me. That was my way of doing it. Search me, go for it. You're not putting me through a freaking scanner, you know. And it's a sad thing that they're doing it to American citizens in their own country. It's not dealing with other foreigners. You're dealing with straight-up Americans. I also got another question here. I got to move kind of quick because I can't be on too long. 541, you're on the air.
Hi, Joanna. This is Jay over on Oregon.
Hey, Jay. So good to have you on finally.
I know. I've been wanting to talk with you guys for a while, and I finally have a free moment today, and I looked on Sovereign Warriors. I said, oh, the show's going on right now. Let me tune into that.
Yay.
I haven't heard from Joanna for a while, so I'll see what she's up to. Yeah, that was interesting that you guys were mentioning about with the TSA. That's interesting. And with the TSA with the citizens, and you know how they search up the citizens, it's because the citizens are the corporations and the corporations are the foreigners on the nation states, that's pretty much why they get searched. Usually the
mm-hmm.
U.S. nationals won't have to be subjected to those kind of treatments or anything.
Actually,
like that, because they're not part of the
district. I want to point something out to you here. That's not why they're getting checked. When people are buying their airplane tickets, they're not being put on the airplane as persons. They're putting on the airplane as cargo, and that's the reason why. Okay, so this has got nothing to do with the citizen and the national. This has to do with the way people buy tickets and the fact that they don't read them. So if you go in and you buy a ticket at the counter, okay, as opposed to online, you can specify. So you're getting put on the plane as a person, as opposed to somebody who bought online, pick up a ticket at the airport. And when you're using the convenience of internet purchasing for your tickets, you're getting booked on the plane as cargo. And the reason they're doing the TSA checks is because it's no different than bringing in a load of fruit from Costa Rica. We got to check it for quarantine. We don't want to make sure it's got no virus or bugs.
Yep.
We don't want to have anything in. So this is basically what they're doing, is TSA is operating under a quarantine and warranty provision because the people with the tickets do not know they're being packaged onto the plane. And it gets even more bizarre because what's happening is every single flight that's coming in and out of the United States now is in and of itself a single corporation. So Flight 52 out of L.A. to Lincoln, Nebraska is in and of itself a separate corporation for that flight. And they are able to get in insurance reductions because of the fact they're packaging people on as cargo rather than as persons, which they call people. And that's the whole reason why the airplane industry has had this big change, and you're getting airline pilots that are getting paid less than posties, and yet they're doing some very incredible jobs. So just to correct you on that, it's not nation state citizen. From my take, it's because you're getting packages, cargo versus person.
No, oh, you're absolutely right.
Standard.
That is.
Mm-hmm. And the scanners, Jagger, tell him about the scanners, how much it costs per head when a person goes through a scanner.
Oh, well, they get $15,000 per head from what we've seen on the books, and that's just the front end of the book that we can see. So they get,
that's amazing.
It's amazing, yeah. Well, here's a quick look at the psychodrama of the government. Whatever they tell you the fee or the fine is for not obeying. So for TSA, the maximum for screwing up here is like $15,000 to $25,000. Well, if you go back into the company books and you do all that drudgery of reverse engineering and follow all the trails down, it turns out that somebody at the airport's picking up $15,000 a head every time they pop somebody through the nuke chute. Pretty cool, eh?
Huh.
I mean, that's a good idea.
Yeah, that
all
is.
You guys. And they're doing it because the individual that's going through there does not realize they're being packaged as cargo and that this is actually an insurance requirement. Because in order to make food safe when you travel, you radiate it. So if you're getting bananas out of Brazil, you want to make sure it's safe for North Americans, you radiate the food. Now, not all other countries are going, that's a good idea. But it is an acceptable standard in some areas. So think about it that way. These are not people that are being put onto planes. This is cargo that's being checked for contamination. That's their thinking. And you have to do a lot of research to go backwards in the books, but the numbers are there if you're willing to do it. And the great thing is the insurance companies know that.
Oh, yeah, and everybody's profiting off of it except for the individual getting on the flight.
In which case, I myself would go and get a true and certified copy of the airplane ticket prior to getting on. If you want to be a smartass, you're going to challenge them to do it the right way. Go and get a photocopy, true and photocopy, and then get risk insurance management in the local neighborhood that you're flying out of. So if you're flying out of L.A. to Lincoln, Nebraska, go get risk management in L.A. to stamp the true and certified copy of your ticket. If you have any problems with TSA, simply tell them to call up Risk Insurance Management.
I wanted to ask you a question about that. I heard you mention that it was a few weeks ago on a show that Jurena had posted on Sovereign Warriors, and I think it was about 20-30 minutes, but I was listening to it, and I was very interested in what you were saying about that. And, I just lost my train of thought.
Risk insurance management, using them as a way
risk management
to solve dispute.
Yeah.
And
I heard the best thing,
Jay, yourself and anybody else who's got questions about risk, that write them down, send them to Drew, and we're going to do a show just on that to show you how to make this more efficient for yourself.
Well, it was interesting that you had said on a previous show that you get a document stamped by risk management. And that really rung a bell in my head, and I said, with the risk management, because we were preparing to deal with them over here on a certain issue, and then we got a little more blessings about it, and we were able to avoid having to do that. But it was interesting that you said that when you had a claim, that you would have risk management stamp that, and then the individual or the corporation or the entity that you had the claim against, they had 72 hours to make good on it, or risk management will make good on it by default.
Well,
like death certificate, right? Wasn't it about the death certificate?
Well,
it was
off with the death certificate, but essentially, Jay, what you're referring to is, yes, we don't set the time frames. We let their own rules set the time frame. And that usually what does it. But once risk insurance is sent off, and risk insurance will now get the corporation to purge the system. So don't name the agent, just name the corporation. You have a problem with Corporation ABC, you put your claim against the corporation, you get risk insurance to stamp it off, and that's taking into, of course, the assumption you know what that process is. Now, risk insurance...
Yes, you're absolutely right.
Yeah, risk insurance will not bump it down the line. It might be 30 days, might be 60 days, might be 90 days. Depends on which way they're running their quarter. But they will fix it. And all of a sudden, it's done. But you have to have the patience. Whether it'll happen in 72 hours is hard to say. People I know that use this system, don't give them deadlines. This is business. This is accounting. You're running books every quarter. Fix it this quarter. Fix it next quarter. Fix it at the end of the year. It doesn't matter, but it has to be done because it's a fiscal to a financial conversion that's going on, which is where risk insurance steps in. So they're running this on the fiscal side of the books. Risk insurance is running the corrections, the remedy, the relief, the cure, and the maintenance on the financial side. So 72 hours, at least the people I know that do this, they don't give them 72 hours. They just tell them that, look, it's business, it's accounts, and it's fiscal, and it's financial. It's the two differences. They're doing a gender change out of fiscal to steal, loot, and plunder from the estate. You have the job to stop them. And on that note, right. It's very helpful for you to, people to explore the next level. In our particular case in British Columbia, we now have communications with both the auditor and the comptroller. And the auditor is the one who's opened the door to the comptroller, a little bit more elegant in language usage. However, this is very important for anybody who wants to go these routes. Remember, you actually have to do part of the work yourself. You can't just print the mail off and walk away hoping the mail will take care of it. No, you got to pick up the phone, you got to walk through the door, you got to talk to these people. But when you talk to them, it's basically directions and instructions. No one's asking. You're simply informing them and letting them do their job because they do know how to fix it if you allow them the time. Wow.
Yep. It has to be patience. There's a lot of patience involved. Absolutely.
It,
I think a lot of the people think it's supposed to happen overnight or agencies are supposed to jump to it immediately and make this absolute priority, but they... A lot of people fail to realize that, yes, this is a regular transaction that's going on here. This is regular business that you're conducting, and so you're no more special than this entity over here conducting the same business.
Exactly, Jay, and I'm glad you brought
everybody
that up.
Has to get in line.
Yeah, well, the temperance, and there is a way to get yourself to the front of the lineup. There are avenues there, but the thing is, yes, when you're doing this, you know, it's okay. Don't expect this stuff to be done overnight because it takes them time to do it. And you're right, because it is. It's a standard business transaction. This is how we do things. And once you adopt that attitude, you'll find out you get very reasonable efforts from everybody back, as long as you coordinate yourselves with them. You don't put the fire under their butt. They won't put the fire under your butt. And things do revolve. The next thing you know, eventually, bingo. You get a phone call and an email saying, the account has been resolved. Check's been delivered. It does happen.
That's always a nice thing, isn't it?
Oh, it is.
Yeah, yeah.
Now,
I mean, the amazing thing is the people who manage to do this, at least the ones that I've talked to, that have shown me the evidence of their checks, the earliest was 120 days. Most of them were 6 to 8 months. And they had to do a lot of learning in order to get there. But they did it. So, you know, hope springs eternal.
Yep. Now, Jag, did you say that that you have talked with individuals that received treasury checks in reference to their estates?
No, not treasury checks. They're not treasury checks.
Okay.
No, they are issued out of the public liabilities division.
Okay.
To the estate. See, Treasury, a lot of people confuse where Treasury sits in the lineup. First of all, the Auditor General has to make sure that we have books. The Comptroller then says, okay, we're going to do the set-off and adjustment from public liabilities. And it's real simple. From an auditor's point of view, you have an open account. Once we open the account, we establish a price on that account. The credit and debit get entered into as fresh credit. We then render, state, settle, and close the account. So the directions and instructions are to go back, to the public liabilities that we are now in a position to close this account and therefore instruct the tax agents to return the capital and interest of this account back to the estate, which is why they issue the estate check out. But it's not the Treasury that issues the estate check. The Treasury has a connection to this, but it's usually the public liabilities division that issues the estate check. Now, most people didn't even know there was a public liabilities division in Canada.
Hey, girl, are you there?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. Oh, Jack,
I'm sorry.
Okay, no worries. Oh, go right ahead, and then I have a question right after Jack answers your question. No problem. Go right ahead.
Oh, I didn't have a question, Drew. I was listening to Jaguar speak.
Oh, Jaguar, you can go ahead and continue on what you're saying. I'm sorry.
No. All I was saying is that for Jay's case, because dealing with the Americans, you have to look around Treasury, but not necessarily at Treasury. For the Canadians, and this is really good, because now the Americans can reverse engineer the Canadians. This is how it works in Canada. The Public Works and Government Services of Canada is the primary position. They are the ones that issue the checks. They issue it out of Matane, Quebec, and it's under the Public Liabilities Division. They are the ones that actually use the tax forms, but they're the ones that enforce the tax agent to perform. So you have to do that. Now, in the United States, you have to figure out who's running Public Liabilities Division and what is their connection with Treasury. Now, it works pretty much the same. It's the Auditor General that clears the books and tells you we have books, both on the public liabilities side, which is the budget, and on the surplus side. So they know where both sets of books are, repository, depository. Once you give them the opportunity to do that, Comptroller then tells Treasury, okay, we have an open account. We did render it, we did state it, we did settle it, we did close it. We're now going to take this value off of the public debt and remove it all the way across the board from municipal to international. And we must do this by the return of the capital and the interest to the original supplier of the faith and the credit. And that's how that works. And that's where
yep.
it's very – you. And now this is why I'm saying bundle up. Bundle up. You got to bundle up. Get two or three, you got at least two or three that are willing to do a little work here, because where the fall downs occur is question period, when they're calling back. You need to know which hat you got, and sometimes it's a little difficult to do that. So it's much easier when they're calling somebody in your bundle in regards to issues. So I'm sorry, thank you very much for calling about the Jaguar site, but I'm sorry, the site of mine died last week, for fuck's sakes, and the family's crying. I mean, the damn boy died last week, and you're asking questions about money. Why don't you talk to the trustee? Why didn't you talk to the Esquire, for Christ's sakes? Don't be talking to us. The family's mourning. The boy died last week. I mean, seriously, give his mother a heart attack. And you got to talk to him this way, because they want you to give them the answers they're looking for. So you got to figure out which hat you're at. So when they're calling looking for certain people, you have to remember who you are. Which corpus are they looking
exactly.
for? So if you
exactly. Oh, and by the way, I have one more question real quick before we get going here. So sorry, Jag. Go ahead, Shelley. How are you doing?
Am I on?
Okay, awesome.
What do you?
Yes, I can hear you fine.
Are you getting any feedback? Because I'm not sure here. It might be a bit of a lag or something.
That's okay. Do you have any questions?
Actually, I was wondering about something, yeah, because I noticed that in the UK, as I was mentioning earlier, that the European Union, they are removing those scanner machines. So it does seem like some of these terrible things are being reversed. But I'm trying to set up a solar power system at the moment. And when I spoke to my landlord of the house, the property owner, that is, They said that you still have to get planning permission just for solar panels. I thought, well, that's crazy. It's supposed to be green. They were talking recently that they're having to cut back on some of the street lighting because they can't pay their bills, yet they still have to go for this dogmatic system of where you've got to basically pay for planning permission, because planning permission is not free, is it? You know, and it's the people who can't afford, it's the people who can't afford the fuel bills who most need cheaper energy. So it's kind of crazy. And I was wondering if Jaguar was aware of anything, any legislation that was going to be helping people in the near future regarding free energy sources.
Okay, have you ever been to the Keshe Foundation?
No, I'm not. I haven't heard of it.
K-E-S-H-E.
Could you type it in the chat? Maybe I'm getting some horrible clicks again now.
Keshe Foundation.
Okay. What is it again, Jack?
I'll just pop it into your Skype. K-E-S-H-E Foundation.
Yes.
Dot org.
Just send it to me. Just send it to me, and I'll copy and paste it.
Yeah, it's right there. Yeah. This is something to look at. It's not legislation. But it is an answer. The legislation is changing around the planet. I can see it here at this end. And they're adapting a unique maneuver in Canada. They're coming in under the Health Act, actually.
Oh, great. Can you still hear me? Well, it's just that the reason I'm asking is because I've noticed there's quite a lot of people in this town where I live who are starting to turn to alternative energy, and you know, like solar power. And there's been a massive increase in solar panel efficiency recently. I don't know if you're aware about this, but for example, on eBay, I saw a solar panel that's 80 watt that you can get for £74. That is amazing. Actually, that's what I'm trying to get at the moment. And it's 80 watts, and that's enough to run quite a lot of lights and things. And a few years ago, for that 80-watt panel, you could have paid somewhere in the region of £1,000, if you know what I mean. So prices are coming down a great deal. There's such a lot of new innovation just lately. But there's still blocks there, you know. There's still obstacles that we need to get past. Because obviously, if you're someone like me or someone else who's struggling to pay the bills, right? You know, you're literally having to scratch every penny. There needs to be more help out there. There needs to be more. Somebody needs to cut through all this crappy red tape. You know, how can we save the environment? How can we help Mother Earth if all this red tape is stopping us? You know, that is what concerns me. I mean, it's like somebody's put the handbrake on.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, and this is one of the reasons why we are bringing account science architecture, the language of commerce, as commerce uses it, so that gives everybody an opportunity. So where we're having a success, one out of 100,000, as people bundle up, it will be able to enhance the recovery rate.
Yeah.
The system in and of itself wants us to get smarter so we can understand. And most of the people you're talking about the red tape, they don't like the red tape either.
Mm.
So if we can make it easier for them because we understand a little bit of what they're doing, ask yourself this. How well do you know how City Hall works?
I missed that last bit. How well what?
The City Hall operate.
Oh, City Hall operate, yeah.
Okay.
Well, I know that there's a lot of nonsense. For example, I was told that I live in what's called a historical protected zone. That means that there's building regulations that prevent you from constructing or erecting certain things outdoors, outside your property, based on its appearance. And I think that's so ridiculous. I mean, I can appreciate the fact that we have a lot of historical buildings here and we don't want to deface or damage them, but there's a point where our adaptation towards better technology is being prevented from happening simply because people are afraid of the way it might look. And, you know, we get these people who don't like wind farms in their backyard. And there's a balance you've got to strike, whereas it's a question of what people need. I mean, what serves the people? I mean, we're in a desperate situation now where people need certain basic rights to be able to exist, just to live, and they're worrying about how it looks, you know? I mean, it just makes me, it just drives you mad, you know, when you think about it.
Yeah, no, I understand that. Most city halls are redundancy. So what I find is I go straight to two areas. I go to engineering, and I go to accounting. And I use those two to get everywhere else.
Yeah.
As long as they see efficiency and the funds. All you have to do is show accounting where they're going to save funds, they'll tell engineering to change their rules.
Hmm.
And that's what we've seen. I've got my eye on a lot of districts in Canada here that are under somewhat like the English, the historic provisions. But they have been able to get various communities to allow them to adapt to the green standards because, A, it was engineerily more efficient and therefore was fiscally more efficient. And most people in City Hall will change if you push them the right way. They're a little bit more dodgy in your part of the hood than here. But they are talkable.
Yeah. Well, that's great. I don't want to take too much of the time because I know Drew is a bit short of time. I don't know if Janice wants to ring in. I don't know. Maybe Janice could come in. I know she's never done this before. And ask her if she can call in. Maybe she can try. I know she's got free international calls.
And
I know she's chatting
away on the chat room. Yeah, they're both from, by the way, Jack, they're both from the UK. What part of UK again?
Well, I'm in northeast Yorkshire. I'm in the sort of in the middle bit, the little bit in the centre. When you look at it from the sky.
Yorkshire. You've been there, Jack?
Yeah.
I know you've been to England.
Yeah, we've been to Wiltshire, but not Yorkshire.
Wow. Yeah, he went to go through the crop circles and all that fun stuff. So, which is pretty awesome. But anyway, I'm going to have to close off, though, because I can't be on too long, because I got things I have to do, fortunately, you guys. But thank you so much for getting on the call, Shelley. I really appreciate it. It was awesome to have you on. Thank you so much, Jay, from Oregon, coming on the show as well. And the lady that came on earlier, 646, I forgot her, I don't know her name, but about the Peruvian and the TSA. Thank you so much for calling in and, you know, expressing your feelings and outlook about what's going on right now, and as well as questions. I mean, that's what we need. I mean, that's the way to go. Thank you again, Jaguar, for sharing really important information, eye-opening information. See, it's not only the way that the elite, you know, they see us as just destroying us. They see us as money makers. Like, you know, everything is an account and everything is numbers. It's all about the money, you know. So you tend to look at things in a lot different way.
as opposed to how you usually would look or a lot of the patriot movements would look at it. Really, it's all about accounting, and there's ways of handling it and communicating with them in a more effective way. When you communicate with them in a very effective way, then they will bend over for you. And that's the way. And I believe that Jaguar is the guy who's got that information. And I do have also had questions, Jag, about people are asking about the SPC, if you could touch a little more into that. The SPC package also, because they want to know, they wanted you to go into it a little more. I know a lot of you are waiting for the packages for the updated version.
Yeah, well, basically, like I said, right now we're just waiting for the virtual library to be ready. Mm-hmm. That's in process, and I got word sometime this week. It's imperative at this point when we come back out to start at the areas that were never covered before, so it's an all-inclusive position. So we want to adapt this in a way that you can acclimatize yourself in. Now, right now, Drew's going to be going on holidays in a little bit. I'm going to be going on holidays. So when we get back, we'll have everything set up for you so that you can move in, and we'll have an adjustable lesson plan in basically three levels. Beginners, you want to come in, just take a look. Kind of tire kick, there's the intermediate, then there's the development, just along the lines of ninja belts. You know, you start off with a white belt, end up with a black belt. But this way, take into account all of the formats and layers and explain to you that for each piece that you have to do, there's additional cost. It's not what we have, it's what you have to do. So that's all going to be coming out, and Drew and I have talked about we're going to coordinate this over the holidays. Well, we're both holidays and with our families so that we can bring this out to you right after our holidays and take it from there. And if there's anything that comes sooner, I'm sure Drew will be on Facebook to let you know ASAP. But that's the plans for now.
Yeah, thank you so much. Very much. And, yes, I do have to do holiday, go on a holiday trip as well, which will probably be about a week. And I guess we're just going to go play it by ear what's going to happen, because it's going to be a big journey. We might even drive on into Mexico through there to get to where we're at. I mean, it's just going to be a big, heavy-duty journey. So, my gosh, once we get all that taken care of, like the most essential stuff, then we can actually focus on getting this ready. So probably within the next couple weeks or so, things should start coming together. But I just want to say thank you guys for listening to my show, Illuminating Minds, on Freedomizer Radio so much. And please, you can always download the show and listen to it anytime you wish to get all the particulars and information, you know, for you to understand it better too as well. Just keep rewinding it. Okay? So y'all take care, and see you later next week. Bye-bye.